You are listening to Grandpa Lempsheets on RadioArian.com.
Wait is over. That's right. It's time for installment number 5 of the all-new Church of the Lampshade show. Your host, Grandpa Lampshade. It's great to get to sit down once again with you and meet this week here on Radio Arian. And we've got a great show this week. We're going to have a great Christian message for you. And we will, of course, get to that. But as always, we have to sit down and visit about those topics that we find relevant and things in the news. All these things such as this. Before we head in for this week's sermon, that having been said, we've got a whole lot, needless to say, to cover this week, so we're going to try to get right to it. But of course, before we do that, we have to get to the obligatory shackle grubbing. That's right, we shamelessly shackle grubbing here. Be sure and check out on the front page of the main page of Radio Arian. Check out the sidebar. We do have a little bit of Grandpa Lampshade merchandise over there. I suggest clicking the accessories tab when you go to the page, because there's a lot of cool stuff there, and all products on that page does not actually show all products, so you want to hit each different category. See if there's something that is to your liking in the merch store. If that takes off, we're going to expand with some other designs and stuff. That's kind of an experimental thing, and honestly, so far it hadn't been that great, so we may move on from that and do something else. As always, your continued support is much needed. So the P.O. box remains available for that. You can address it to Legal Fund. Some people have expressed some concerns about that kind of, you know, the diversity in the post office may get sticky fenders. So if you feel that way, you can also just address it to Box Holder. I saw someone else do that, and I thought that's a good idea. P.O. box 6621, Granbury, Texas 76049. Cash, check, or money order. Checks and money orders can be made out to Dan Jeffries. And we do have Bitcoin is back up. I've had several of you say, hey, Gramps, I ain't sending nothing through the mail. You get the Bitcoin. My Bitcoin account had been I've been having problems with that. I've got all that ironed up, and I'll try to remember to get the new Bitcoin address put down at the bottom of the description. So those of you that want to do the Bitcoin thing, there's that. And final note, I am continuing my offer of my first book for free for those of you sending your support. Just drop an email into your envelope, or if you're doing the Bitcoin things, hey, Gramps just sent you some Bitcoin. Here's my email address, and I'll send you a PDF copy of the book. Don't expect too much. It's a pretty short book. And yeah, I'm so used to in my writing, I've always, those of you been here with me through this journey for a long time. You know, I'm so used to writing things in the format of articles, you know, making that transition to the longer format of books. It's kind of tough, yeah. But honestly, for a first go at this, I'm pretty happy with it, and it's something I've written up that you can share with normie friends and family to kind of, you know, make them maybe understand a little clearer without scaring them off. What's going on in this world around them as they look as the society, as the nation continues in its downward decline. Of course, all of your support is very much needed. I continue trudging towards forward with my plans for a legal fight against those who have singled out myself and my family. And also, your support's needed just to keep the lights on. I continue to remain unemployed. But you know, everything's either, you know, a negative, or you can look at it as an opportunity. And I have the opportunity to do more shows. I had the pleasure of being on Friday for the Daily Nationalist with Simon Longshanks. You know, I'm available to do more shows and to work on more writing. writings and to do more of these things. So it's all kind of a glass half full, glass half empty. But the thing is, when the bank account gets empty, it's all glass half empty. So I do appreciate your support. It's the only thing that's going to keep me being able to do these things. So yeah. Okay. So we got the capitalist shekel grubbing out of the way. I try to get by that as quickly as I can, but seriously, your support. Some of you have written some very heartfelt letters. I read everyone. I do very much appreciate what you did. It makes a difference. And no, it doesn't have to be a lot of money. I mean, believe me, I understand, you know, there's thousands of people listening to the show. $5, $10 out of everybody makes a whole lot. It all adds up. So don't feel like, oh, well, I'd be embarrassed to only send this. Forget that noise. I ain't proud, obviously, as we go forward, shekel grubbing. Okay, we got that out of the way, and I kind of rushed through that, but we've got a whole lot we want to talk about. Okay, normally I don't even mention when I record the shows because our topics are generally kind of broad, so it doesn't really matter. But this week we're going to be more event focused, as you can probably guess what we're going to continue to discuss. So I am recording this show on Saturday, so things being fluid as they are, you know, if other things happen and you're listening to this, you're like, well, Grandpa, that kind of sounds stupid in the context of what happened Monday morning. Well, hey, I recorded the show on Saturday, so the show here is being recorded on Saturday, so bear with me if some things don't wind up in the context of the time you're listening to the show as it airs on Tuesday. It would be like, well, what the hell, you know, that's why. So if something happened and I don't mention it or it doesn't line up with what I say, you know, now you understand. Friday I had the pleasure of being on with Sven Longshanks for the Daily Nationalist show, and of course the big topic, the news had just broken of the shooting in the mosques in New Zealand. And as I say, the story just broke, so we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants. I've had 24 hours to try to kind of catch up. And of course, again, things are fluid. A lot of things are happening. A lot of things are events going on, information revealed. Since then, I've had the chance to sit down and read this guy's manifesto. And, you know, without too much comment on, I would just suggest that others do the same. Don't sit there and let other people tell you, you know, what people say. I mean, go look at the information, make your own decision, make your own judgment. I will say this, that the media has been talking about, you know, it's a rambling, incoherent at times manifesto. And the only reason it seems largely seems incoherent to them is there's some stuff he puts in there that's like internet culture related stuff that they just simply don't get. So they just say it's a rambling, incoherent thing. But again, I did finally get it when we aired on the Daily Nationalist Friday. I mean, the story just broke. I hadn't read the manifesto, but we were just kind of largely flying by the seat of our pants on that. So I've had 24 hours to get, you know, kind of get some of this done and look into these things. And again, I don't believe in letting other people tell you what somebody else says when you have the ability to go do that yourself and make your own judgment, your own decisions. But we're going to talk about this because I think there's a lot of stuff, a lot of perspective we can look at this. A lot of people are overlooking, and a lot of people, I think, honestly, are missing. As I just said, I sat down, I read this guy's manifesto, and one of the things that really struck me reading the manifesto is how, again, this is an example of, as things are going along, moving along in our society, the terms left and right, really, they're losing all their meaning. They're really becoming antiquated to the point that we're going to have to figure out some way. And I don't know if it's going to be nationalist versus globalist. I mean, Marxist still seems very much relevant, but I don't know. You know, it's all becoming so jumbled and there's so much. I mean, this guy describes himself as like an eco-fascist. You know, he's very big on the environment and things such as that. But as he talks about overpopulation destroying the planet and being a danger to the planet, he also points out that the overpopulation isn't happening in the white race. It's happening on all these other races across the planet. So, you know, you see this, you know, the environmentalism, which has been a captive topic of the left for almost forever, because what has constituted the right in our society has basically been a mouthpiece for the big corporations. So, of course, they're like, we don't need any environmental protections laws. It's not like the corporations would dump pollution into the water. Well, they moved to China where there is no environmental laws and they dump the pollution into the water. I mean, come on, we know better than this. But I just thought this was a classic example going through this of how the terms left and right really it is so beyond time to move on, I think, from these terms. But yet we have to have some way to differentiate like ourselves from our opponents. And we kind of fall right back into that, you know, into that left versus right. Or is it going to be nationalist versus globalist? Or is it going Marxist versus something else? I don't know. It's a very illustrative that the terms left and right are really, as they've been used over the decades, losing their meaning. Of course, you know, and kind of going along with this, like looking in normie news articles about, you know, about this happening. And I saw a lot of, I was looking at this one article about this and reading the comments, because I like to read the comments because it gives you kind of a feel of what the brainless masses are doing, what the brainless masses are doing out there. And by the way, you know, if my voice sounds a little bit, because I noticed I was on with the Daily Nationalist with Sven Friday, and I noticed that my voice is, it just finally dawned on me, my voice has kind of changed a little bit. And I think part of that is I'm vaping way the hell too much because of all the stress in my life, as you've imagined over the past month or so. So if you kind of notice that, Grandpa, you sound a little raspy. Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm probably vaping way the hell too much. Okay, but anyway, I like to read these normie article comments because it gives you a pulse on you know, people that are just kind of bumbling through life, what you know, their take on this is, you know. And of course, the leftists, it's always the same thing: orange man bad, everything is Trump. It's like if a meteor hit the earth, it would be somehow because orange man bad. The fact that this guy that did the shooting was big on the environmentalism and called himself an eco-fascist, I think is funny because it causes like this error, this 404 error or something, because, you know, it's like somehow it's Trump's fault, orange man bad, but eco environment good. Good, fascist bad, eco good, error. It's like a blue screen of death. But what I found funny looking through these comments, the conservatives are in there going, signaling, you know, they're in there signaling, you know, like, he wasn't a conservative. I just so you people know, this guy was no conservative. And it's like, I have the news flash for you conservatives. Nobody gives a shit. Really, nobody gives a shit about you conservatives. You're irrelevant. If you're conservative and you listen to Grandpa Lampshade's Church of the Lampshade said thoughts of the day, Grandpa Lampshade's Church of the Lampshade, you're like, I like your sermons and everything, but hold on, Grandpa Lampshade. What do you mean? No, I'm serious. You know, it's a bitter pill, but we're here to give out pills of truth. Whether they're sweet, bitter, in between, it doesn't matter. Look, nobody gives a shit about conservatives because they're irrelevant. Your enemies don't care because you're no threat. You haven't conserved. You haven't stopped anything in like ever. So conservatives, he was no conservative. Oh, good on you. Nobody cares. You think the Marxists, the globalists, they, oh, well, we were going to try to nail this guy as a conservative. They don't care. They're going on about white supremacists because it's only the pro-white activists on the true right wing. Again, I hate using those terms anymore because they're almost irrelevant. Is the pro-white activists the only ones that are actually putting up any resistance to the Marxist left? The Marxist left doesn't care about you conservatives because you're relevant. You're not even a speed bump. He wasn't a conservative. I'm waiting for the conservatives. Honestly, I put this up on Gab the other day, and it's going to be funny if it's already happened. I'm waiting for conservatives to be sitting there and saying, see, things like this mosque shooting couldn't have happened if these Muslims would have been would have been better armed. If these Muslims would have been armed in the mosque, they could have stopped this shooting. If it hasn't happened yet, I guarantee you it's probably going to happen. Because that's the way they were. It's the way their little conservative minds work. And in so many ways, conservatives are like NPCs, but just on a different topic. And we talk about the Marxists being NPCs, you know, orange man bad, you know. But I mean, conservative, you know, guns always good. You know, guns always good, no matter, well, if these Muslims would have been armed in their mosque, they could have stopped this to stop it. Never mind. I think the last thing we want as a society is a bunch of Muslims running around being more armed than they are already. Somebody responded to that and said they were armed. They just couldn't get down to the basement in time to get their AK-47s. And it might be right. I don't know. But anyway, nobody. They wasn't all conservative. Nobody cares. Oh my gosh. I mean, conservatives really. No, nobody cares. It's time to let go. It's time to let go. And one of the things in my book, which you're going to get a free copy of if you send financial support to Grandpa. No, but really, one of the things, I mean, the title of the book is Disappearing Middle. And one of the things we discuss in the book is how everything in the center, and conservatism is in the center. It's the middle. And how the middle has disappeared. It's like a no man's land. If you think about trench warfare in World War I, that area in between the trenches is no man land. And it's to the point that anything out there is just going to be decimated. And honestly, I'm mocking conservatives, but I'm doing it out of a certain level of love, or at least, if not love, hope. Hope that you might find something. Because, I mean, honestly, nobody has any use for it. I mean, seriously, in a lot of ways, I have more respect for the leftists, for the Marxists, than I do for conservatives.
That proves that these people who call themselves right are really up the left.
No, I'm just saying that at least the Marxists do have principles. I mean, they do. They have things they believe in. They have things that they're willing to really push and fight for and not compromise on. I mean, there are things that are destructive to society. They're stupid things. They're things that I don't support, but you have to admire the fact that they do believe in those things, and they are willing to support those things, and they're willing to support each other, even if they get called names by the conservatives, because nobody cares. And, you know, they stand with each other. They pretty much stick with one another because they have these things they believe in, these goals they believe in. So, I mean, you got to hand them that, where conservatives just run around looking for approval from the Marxists, ultimately. Well, this is going to make us look bad. Look bad for who? The Marxists that hate you anyway. I just find that amazing. But no, you know, conservatives, look, you can join the Marxists or you can join us. Otherwise, you're going to stay out there in no man's land and people are just ignoring you, and you're just wind up catching fire from both sides, and you're just going to continue to be miserable. At some point in time, you're going to have to pick a trench. Nobody likes trench warfare, but it beats being in that area, that no man's land between the trenches. So yeah, at some point in time, and yes, I'm actually stealing lines from the book. I mean, at some point in time, whether you find it distasteful or not, you're going to have to pick a trench and you're going to have to go get in it, because nothing's going to survive out there in no man's land, and you don't want to be stuck out there. And you might find it distasteful, you know, the nationalist right, whatever you want to call us. You know, you might not like being over here with us, but it's either that or go join the Marxists. And I don't think you really want to do that. So anyway, something to think about and move on. I want to continue on this topic because there's something I think a lot of people, you know, big picture wise in this mass shooting, that a lot of people, you know, aren't thinking about, or at least as of today when I'm recording this, people aren't discussing it. I mean, it amazes me how people tend to view events such as this in a vacuum. Yeah, they look at it by itself like it's this one singular thing instead of being a puzzle piece in a bigger picture. And yeah, you know, you look at this mass shooting, and the thing I think a lot of people aren't discussing, a lot of people aren't thinking about big picture wise is, to me, sitting here on Saturday, 24 hours after this has happened, it's very possible this could happen in the next few days before the show airs, but it's inevitable, I believe, it is inevitable that the Muslims are going to counterattack over this. I mean, really, if you attend modern cuck church in a city in a big, you know, well-known mega church or something, you know, I wouldn't show up. You know, I would stay away from target-rich environments because, it's white people. It's white people who are, you know, modern church cucks that do candlelight vigils and balloon releases. I mean, Muslims don't do that shit. I mean, I guarantee you Muslims are going to hit back over this. And this will make things very interesting, especially in the context of time frame. How long before the Muslims counterstrike? Now, some of that's going to be taken because we know that a lot of this Muslim terrorist stuff is state sponsored. I mean, come on. We know that. We know, and not just like, yeah, I can hear the conservatives now. Yeah, Iran. No, not Iran. U.S., Israel, Saudi Arabia. We know that a lot of these terrorist groups are state sponsored. So, you know, that's decision for those groups is going to happen at a state sponsored level. But I mean, not all of them are. Not all of them are necessarily, or at least not necessarily, taking orders from a state sponsor. But just as a group, these Muslims are not going to do candlelight vigils and talk about peace and love and how we need to understand the infidel. I mean, let's be real here. I fully expect a Muslim counterstrike. There's going to be a Muslim counterstrike over this. And the reaction to that, and no, I'm not wanting that to happen. This is just, you know, I mean, if I'm sitting there watching a storm and I'm watching this tornado barrel across this field, and I say, well, it's going to be interesting when that tornado hits that barn over there. I'm not saying, well, I want the tornado to hit the barn. I'm just watching the path of this thing and say, man, if it hits that barn, a lot of stuff going to fly out of there. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Oh, no way, shape, or form am I saying I want it to happen, believe me, but I do believe it's almost a sure thing that this is going to happen. And what's going to be interesting, again, especially in context, because like I just said as we started this part of this discussion, people view these events in a vacuum, and I don't know if they're just dumbasses or what, but they do. And people look at these things, but it's inevitable that the Muslims are going to counterstrike, and it's going to be interesting in the time frame, especially if it happens within a few days of this event or a few weeks. But there is going to be a Muslim terror attack against white people as retaliatory attack. And it's going to be funny to watch the echo media play this, isn't it? My prediction is they're gonna excuse it, because whenever the Muslims do a terror attack, they pretty much try to excuse it. That'd be the first thing is, you know, not all Muslims, and we can't hold an entire group responsible for the actions of a few radicals. In fact, they usually try not to mention that it's Muslims doing it. Where when this mosque shooting happened, I mean, if I would have bothered to sit there and count how many times they said a white man. Of course, now we've gone ahead to the obligatory white supremacist. A white supremacist, which of course they never can actually define for us what that means. It mostly means a white guy, you know, that's doing something they don't approve of. But no, it's going to be interesting to watch the echo media play this when the Muslim retaliation inevitably comes about. My prediction is they will excuse it. They're doing this because of the white supremacist guy that shot up the mosque. They're going to act as though all the Muslim terror attacks that happened before this mosque shooting never happened. They're going to memory hole that. All of these Muslim terror, we've had all of these Muslim terror attacks. Then you had this guy in the mosque shooting. So they're going to act like none of that before. They're going to try to keep it in the context only of, well, you see, I mean, yeah, they shouldn't have done this counter-terror attack, but they wouldn't have if they hadn't made a mad. It's because of the evil white supremacist guy shooting up the mosque. It's his fault. It's white people's fault that the Muslims did a counterattack. That's my prediction as we sit here. And it's funny because it may actually play out by the time the show airs, which will be just honestly just amazingly prophetic if it does. But even if it hasn't, it's coming. You know it. I know it. Everybody on some level knows it. It's just that most people are going to pretend that they don't know it. But seriously, I mean, white people, cucked out white people, are the only people that do this whole candlelight vigil, balloon release and crap like that. I guarantee you there's some Muslims sitting right now planning payback. And it's going to be interesting. They're not going to be sitting around talking about, we need to stand around and talk about peace, love, and understanding. That they're talking about getting payback. It's coming. And again, it's going to be interesting to see. We already know how it's going to be portrayed by the media. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes down with the masses. It's going to be interesting to see. And honestly, it's on some level, it's just, I don't know, maybe I'm getting more jaded. But when I look at the masses, I mean, just, most people are just amazingly stupid. I really hate to sound like that. And again, maybe I'm just becoming so jaded as I get older, but I don't know. I think they'll probably be successful, or at least partially successful. I mean, really, if it happens before the show airs, within days of the mosque shooting, and the media tries to memory hole every previous Muslim terror attack, I think by and large the populace will buy into it. Well, they probably wouldn't have done this if that old boy hadn't gone. If that guy hadn't gone and shot up them Muslims, well, they probably wouldn't have done this terror attack. Well, what about all the terror attacks before that? What? Yeah, I don't know. It's just like people have become so stupid that people have just become so stupid that they do. They continue. The media tells them what they view these things in a vacuum. They have the inability to stand back and say, well, wait a minute, what about all, you know, this bigger picture and looking at these things in a bigger picture context? I don't know. We'll see. But my advice to all of you really is serious advice. Avoid target-rich environments. I wouldn't go to a large state fair or something like that where there's going to be a lot of people, because I do, especially in urban areas. I believe that it's inevitable that the Muslims are going to, their Muslims going to want payback over this shit. So again, I'd watch that and see what happens with that. We all know how that's going to play out. It's going to be it's going to be interesting to see how many people buy into the narrative that we know is coming. And of course, it's obligatory that we have to point out that on the show nor on Radio Aaron do we in any way, shape, or form promote nor condone violence. We pretty much just do nationalist political commentary. It's so sad because, again, you can't even discuss these things. They don't want you discussing. You can't discuss these things without somebody accusing you of somehow, like, you're promoting it. You're promoting violence. Well, no, we're just discussing these events. So we have to get that out of the way. I mean, and to me, I look back on the context of what we've been discussing here, and I'm like, well, only a complete idiot would think, interpret it as somehow promoting violence. But I know, I understand more and more how the enemy works, and it just, discussing these topics in any way, shape, or form without some sort of emotional, approved, knee-jerk reaction, it will get somehow interpreted as promoting or condoning violence. We don't do that here on Radio Air. We don't do that here on this show. We are simply a political commentary. We look at these things and try to understand the truth of these matters and figure out. And the honest truth is, I'm sitting here and I'm not just me. I'm not sitting here saying just me, but myself and others, you know, if you look at this, if people had listened to us, I mean, we've been warning about this stuff for years. You don't hate the messenger. We've been warning that things continuing to get worse is happening. It's going to happen. And now that things are getting worse, what happens? They point the finger at the messenger. They point the finger at those who have been warning that things are going to get worse. Like somehow it's your fault. Well, I've been saying for years that, you know, we're going to wind up with more conflict and more people killing each other if we don't sit down and have a discussion about the, oh, you wanted people to go kill each other. What? No, it was just the opposite. I've been warning you, but that's what they do. That's what they have done. Trust me, it's been done to me. Let's take this quote out of context and make it sound like he wants this to happen when I'm warning people about it. I've been warning people about it. And honestly, I think it's pointless anymore to warn people because now we're here. If people had listened to people such as myself and others, I'm not sitting here claiming I'm the only one, not by a long shot. If they had listened to those sounding the alarm bells years ago, You know, we might have been at a point to where, you know, we turned, you know, head some of this off, but now, I don't know, you know, we're plowing into the swamp or whatever, so as to speak. Now, I see things could very much are on this verge of escalating very quickly. Again, we'll see how it plays out. But no, we've just been warning. This is the sort of stuff we've been trying to avoid with our warnings of, hey, you know, if we continue down this path, more bad stuff, things are going to get worse, not better. Isn't it amazing? They continue to tell us, if we just do more multiculturalism, utopia will finally be reached. But we keep doing that and things keep getting worse. Yes, but there's going to be a tripping point, you see. And once we get diverse enough, not really, because it's like, that's the argument. You know, you're sitting there going, well, we get more diverse. You keep telling me diversity is making us stronger, but the more diverse we get, the more multicultural we get, things are continuing to get worse. Yes, but that's just because we're not multicultural enough. Once we get multicultural enough, suddenly things will get better. And that doesn't make any sense, does it? Really, it doesn't make any sense. So you start trying something. I mean, you try something in your life and you do this, and then no matter how much you do it, things continue to get worse. Would you sit there and tell yourself, yeah, but If I just do it harder, then all of a sudden things will get better? No, you'll sit there and say, man, the more I do this, the shittier things are in my life. So maybe I need to plan something different. Maybe I should do something different. But you know, you just keep doubling down, and that wouldn't make any sense. You know, it's like that definition of insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. But as a society, namely as white society, that's exactly what we keep doing. If we just, because we keep listening to these people who tell us if we become multicultural enough, then things will get better, but they're getting worse. I mean, the observable result is like these people that try to argue for free trade. You know, it's going to make your lives better. Well, we've had 20 years of free trade and our lives have gotten worse. Our standard of living has gone down. People in that top 1 to 0.5%, they've gotten filthy rich and the rest of us have gotten poorer. Our standard of living has gone down. We have the observable, we have some tangible results of this. No, it's just because you need more free trade. Yeah, that's the corporatist conservative line. We just need more free trade. It's because we don't have enough. Standard of living will go up for you, but it hasn't. It's the same thing. If we become more diverse, then it will make us stronger, but it hasn't made us stronger yet. Ha! Don't you know about my melting pot? We just need to melt more stuff into the pot. Which is just kind of getting on a side note, talking about the ridiculousness of this stuff and how people don't even understand, you know, the melting pot. And then people get this idea because the propaganda behind the melting pot, which was, by the way, invented by a Jew. But the idea behind the melting pot is that you put all of these different cultures and races together and they blend together, melt in the pot, and they blend together and create one culture called America, which is total bullshit. Because if you've ever melted metal, if you've ever like taken metal, if you've ever melted like lead, for instance, if you take a metal and you melt it, or silver, whatever, gold, whatever, whatever, if you melt it into a smelter, if you put it in a big pot and you apply heat and you melt lead, gold, silver, whatever it is you're melting, just the opposite happens. It doesn't blend. You have this solid thing of silver. And you look at it, you go, wow, I've got this brick of silver. But if you melt it, all the impurities in that shit separate and they go to the top. You see, when you melt things in a melting pot, the exact opposite happens is what the stupid bullshit propaganda line claims happens. It doesn't all blend up and turn into one thing. When you melt it, the impurities come out and it actually separates and you wind up with the silver at the bottom. And if there's been a little lead, there's always going to be some impurities. The little bit of lead or iron or whatever the hell else was mixed in there actually floats up to the top, and you can skim that stuff. you can skim it off the top. It doesn't blend together. It separates. So even the melting pot thing itself is stupid and incoherent as a propaganda line, because when you do, when you melt these materials together, it actually, that's the whole point of it. When they melt these things is so they can skim out the impurities and wind up with a more pure end product when they're finished. So even their propaganda is a lie. Even their propaganda is a lie. Because, like I say, when you put things and you melt these materials into a pot, a melting pot, you don't get one thing. You actually wind up with separation. You wind up with separation. The incompatible metal, the incompatible elements separate. I separate. The melting pot actually should be a nationalist propaganda piece, and not this globalist, this diversity propaganda piece. And you know, one more thing is, as we wrap up here before we get into this week's sermon. You know, look, I love diversity. I love diversity. No, really, I do. I love the fact that there are all these different cultures and different races and different things. I do. I mean, come on, people. I watch Japanese subtitled anime. Most of it, I love watching Korean dramas. You know, I watch all these Asian shows. Do you really think, as I know leftists sit here trying to find something. We're going to find something we can get him in trouble for. So, but, you know, you're stuck listening to the show. You're sitting here listening to Grandpa Lampshade. You're being subjected to it. But really, I know you people aren't very smart. You leftists that are listening to this, and you can't, you know, logically process things very good because you run just strictly on that emotional part of your brain. Really, you think I sit around hating other races when all of the TV entertainment I watch comes from Asia, comes from Korea? Yeah, you sit there. What do you think? I sit there and watching 2016 Signal. And so far, I'm about four episodes in, and it's really good. So hopefully, it's got one of my favorite actors in there. So do you think I sit here and watch these Korean dramas, you know, and sit here and what, like Shake with Rage? This is a good show, but these damn slant zipper heads or something. No, you know, I do. I like these other races and cultures and things such as that. It's just because I do like these other races and cultures. I like them. I like the fact that they exist in this world. It makes the world different. You know, I'd love to go to one of these other countries. I would. I'd love to go to like Korea or Japan, just experience it. I want to live there. If you took a bunch of Americans, if you took 2 million Americans and dropped them into Korea or Japan, it would screw the whole culture up because it's not compatible. It would pollute the Korean or the Japanese culture. You would have too many. You would have these foreign elements introduced, and it would mess up that culture, which I enjoy watching from a distance. I would enjoy going there and visiting and experiencing for a short period of time. But if you brought a bunch of white people in and introduced them to that culture and permanently settled them there, it would screw the culture up. It wouldn't work, and there would wind up being conflict, because it would pollute their culture, and you would wind up with less diversity. You would wind up with the Korean, for instance, the Korean culture not being the same, or the Japanese culture not being the same as what made it unique at the time, and that just simply works the other direction. When you bring all of these other foreign cultures into European, into white nations, it pollutes that, and it makes it less, because it's you know, German culture, French culture, whatever. It's a unique culture of its own, just as Japanese or Korean or Iranian or Iraqi or whatever. All of these other cultures are unique of their own, and when you can keep them in their own nations, it's so funny. I see people, before this happened, and I made a comment, and I brought this up a little bit when I was on with the Daily Nationalist, and I'm looking at the clock. We got to get moving here and get into our sermon. But I mentioned this before all of this happened. I commented on how normie conservative types are so boldly, you know, post up things about like wiping out the Muslims and things such as this. And I'm sitting there going, you know, what does that even mean? You're wanting to genocide like billions of people? people. You know, that doesn't, I'm told I'm an evil racist hater. And it's like, I don't agree with that. Why would you think that is a good idea? And somebody made the remark, well, then what do you suggest? Well, I suggest, sending them back to their own countries. They have their own countries. And then, like, once they're there, you know, we shouldn't bring them here. We should, the ones that are here, we should send back their own countries. And once they're there, we should leave them the hell alone. We shouldn't be trying to impose our values and our democracy or whatever on these people with at the end of a barrel of a gun. They're free to live their culture the way they want to without us saying, well, we don't approve of that. We don't like the way you treat your fill in the blank, women, homosexuals, whatever. It's not our business. It's not our business. It's their culture. It's their, they should be able to be in their nations and in their culture to develop, to move forward if, as a people, as a culture. They decide that, you know, they want to go in a different direction and their culture evolves in a different direction, then good on them. If they want to stay doing what they've been doing for hundreds of years, then good on them as well. The problem comes in when you destroy diversity by introducing their culture into ours. I respect these other racist cultures. I really do. I just want the same respect for our culture in return. We got to wrap up that the visit portion of the show, the pre-sermon visit portion of the show. And I'm looking at the clock and we really went long with that. But I knew we were probably going to, because obviously this is a big thing. It's in the news. It's a big thing. It's got to be talked about. And so I kind of knew we were going to go long. But the centerpiece of the show is our Christian sermon. And so if we have to run a little long today, we run a little long today. That's what we'll do. But it is the centerpiece. That's why the new show is called The Church of the Lampshade. It's very much centered on for Christian believers and the development of our faith in this crazy, screwed up world. So we're going to get in here and get the sermon started. Those of you that didn't want to stick around for that, appreciate you hanging out for the visit. And as always, you're welcome to come in and listen in if you so choose. But you're not welcome to sit here and nitpick and try to criticize because you're not a Christian believer, because this ain't your portion of the show. So anyway, you're welcome to say not. Either way, thanks for joining us. The rest of you, get in here, fill those pews. You know what time it is. That's right, it's time for the Church of the Lampshade segment with the Reverend Lampshade putting on the crazy old West frock coat, preacher frock coat. We've got a sermon to preach, and we've got something interesting. I had something else I was going to preach this week. We were going to talk about this week. And then I kind of wound up with an email from a listener, and I'm like, no, you know, asking me a question. I'm like, no, we're going to use it in the next show. That'll be good sermon topic, because these things are very real. These things are very real. We meet where people are at. We get real with people in our Christian faith. And I thought this was a really good thing, because honestly, been there, done that. And I know there's a lot of other people in the same situation. So I thought it'd be great. We're going to have a listener-inspired sermon this week. It's not something we're necessarily going to do all the time, but I thought this, in this particular case, it was something worthy of discussing. So let's get to it. This comes from one of our listeners, Sinsu Shade. Hey, it's almost like a relative or something. We're gonna go ahead and kind of go over the relevant parts of the email, and then we'll kind of get into our discussion on this topic. Oh, honestly, my voice is killing me. I've got to quit vaping so much. Grandpa Lampshade, is there any chance you could maybe do a talk about finding one's faith in God again if they've lost their way and want to get there again? It's hard to explain, but every time I try, it feels like I'm a fraud and it eats me up inside. I love the Bible and I love Christ, but I find it so hard to connect to God or even pray. It's like half of me is Christian and calm and the other half is secular and enraged. I hope this doesn't come across too forward. I don't normally talk of these things, thanks to the Cuck Church and what the state did to me and my kids. Any help with this would be appreciated. Yeah, I like I said, I got this and I'm like, you know, I thought this was something that would be really good. Once in a while, something strikes me and it's like, you know, this is worthy of bringing in. And if you send me a question, if someone sends me a question, I don't use it on the show, don't be offended. I just, like I say, we're not necessarily going to turn this into the sermons will always be listener generated. But this was one of those times, because honestly, I know you think you're the only one that feels that way. And trust me, you're not. That's a lot of people. Been there. Like I said at the beginning, been there, done that. And obviously, I don't know all the particular details of your situation, but I've been there and done that enough that I think we can really address these things. So how do we want to do this? How do we want to go through this? And where do we start? You know, do we tiptoe in? Do we put our toe in the water? You know, there's two different types of people in this world. There's the type of people that get into a cold swimming pool by putting their toe in and then working their way in. And then there's those people that just run and just cannonball off into that. I gotta lie, I'm a toe person. I can't. That water's cold. I cannot just cannonball off into it. I've gotta just ease in there. Two types of people in the world. Okay. Well, so let's talk about this, because finding your faith in God again, and I think your problem here is when you talk about finding your faith in God again, because you talk about what I really highlighted here is you say, every time I try, it feels like I'm a fraud. That's a very big thing. It feels like one of the absolute, trust me, been here, done this, still go through it on a regular basis, okay? They don't feel like it's a failure part on your part. This is a part of the human condition. This is a part of being in the flesh, of being in this world, okay? So don't feel like this means like you're a failure as a Christian. That's a lie from the devil, okay? One of the biggest traps you fall into is when you're trying to find your faith, you're talking about trying to find your faith here, but it feels like, you see, you're looking for that faith to be a feeling, and it's not. You say you feel like you're a fraud and it eats you up inside. I love the Bible and I love Christ. Let's stop there. You feel like a fraud. You see, the emotion, you see the contradiction you're seeing here is the emotion of feeling like. You're continuing in the spiritual part of you, you continue to say, I love the Bible and I love Christ. I want to increase my faith. But see, you're interpreting that negative emotion as your faith. And it's not. And we get sucked into that because there are times that we're strong in the spirit, and we can, like, or at least for me, you feel strong in the spirit, your prayers, you feel like you're making a connection to God, and you'll feel like an emotional upswelling of joy and stuff, and that's great, but that is not faith. That's a blessing from God. Praise God for it. Thank God for it. But no, that's a temporary thing. You see, faith is when you're going through this right here. When you're going through all of your emotions saying, yeah, God's not listening to you. Everybody's sitting there saying, so many people saying, well, Grandpa Lampshade, with all this you've been going through, you know, I'm glad to see your faith is staying strong. My faith is being forged. You know, how many times I'm sitting here, you know, and emotionally I'm like, has God abandoned me? Has God abandoned me? What now? What do I do now? This faith is when all of your emotions come against you, all of your emotions, this accusation, you're a fraud. That's from the devil. The devil is often referred to as the accuser. He's the accuser. If you think of judgment in the context of a court setting, Jesus is like your defense attorney and the devil is like the prosecutor. It's kind of like that. It's kind of a simplistic illustration. But you have to understand the devil is often referred to as the accuser. You're fraud. You're fake. You don't really love God. Where's the connection? Why do you have these other feelings? You wouldn't be having these feelings if you were really saved. If you were really a Christian. It's kind of like that whole... I think it's from a John Wayne movie where he says something like, you know, courage is when you're scared as hell anyway, but you where he says courage is when you're scared as hell, but you saddle up anyway, you know, because somebody had this incorrect, you know, I don't have your courage. You're brave. You're able to go do these. Like, no, courage is when you're scared as hell, but you saddle up anyway and do what you got to do. That's faith. Faith is not an emotion. Faith is when all of these emotions are telling you something else, but you soldier on anyway. That is faith. Now, a few other things. We, of course, got to get some scripture reading here. And you just in passing, you mentioned the modern cuck church. And again, we didn't get into detail in that, and that's fine. But here's the thing. The modern cuck church is an empty, hollow shell. One of the big debates that happened in one of the big modern cuck church congregations recently is they're having a big fit because there was a big push, you know, to normalize homosexual clergy, homosexual weddings, the whole nine yards. In other words, to become just like the world. And the vote actually went the other way for a change, but we all know it's a matter of time because it's already subverted. Because the fact that they're even feeling it necessary to have the conversation in the first place, the sign of that it's been converged and subverted is in the fact that they're even having the discussion. Trust me, here in the Church of Lampshade, we're not even going to discuss whether or not we should have homosexual marriages. That's so far out there that it's not even in the realm of discussion. And people have a hard time wrapping their minds around the idea that something that could be called a church, you know, could be condemned in and of itself. We're going to kind of hit that real quick. Let's do Jeremiah chapter, 23. Let's do verses 11 and 12. For both prophet and priest are profane. Yea, in my house have I found their wickedness, saith the Lord. Wherefore, their way shall be unto them as slippery ways in the darkness. They shall be driven on and fall therein, for I will bring evil upon them, even the year of their visitation, saith the Lord. Both prophet and priest are profane. Yea, in my house have I found their wickedness, saith the Lord. There are a whole lot of so-called Christian churches that the Lord has found wickedness in their houses. That's a reality. That's not just an empty accusation. That's not just me talking. It's observable reality. So when you talk about, when you bring up the modern cuck church, you got to realize so many of these places are empty husks. The Lord has found wickedness in those houses. There's nothing Christian about it. And so you can't allow that. You can't allow their wickedness to deter your faith. You have to soldier on in your faith. Let's see here. Let's go ahead and get our second scripture reading out of the way while we're at it here, and then we can go ahead and kind of wrap up. No, hold off on that. I just changed my mind. Because I looked at the verses we're going to cover, and I want to kind of lay some foundation for that. Again, and I'm kind of at a disadvantage because obviously I don't know all the details of your life, but I've been there and done that. As far as struggle, you talk about wanting to get to the topic of struggling in your prayers. Struggling in your prayers. More specifically, you say finding it hard to connect to God in your prayers. This is a normal thing. What I've discovered, again, I don't know all the details in your life, nor do I need to, be honest. What I have discovered is most of the time, there are several things that make it hard to really feel as though you're connecting in your prayers with God. One is if you are just look around and you have no time to yourself. If you're constantly surrounded by people, information, the TV, radio, I mean, you look around, really, it's so hard to get time in seclusion to prayer, and you need that. We're going to get to that when we start doing our next Bible reading, but if you want to connect to God, you need to have seclusion. It doesn't necessarily mean alone in a room. If you can get out into nature to where you can clear your mind, what you cannot do is have people standing there and somebody talking to you and you're trying to pray in your head or you're trying to say your prayer while you happen to be by yourself in your car driving to work. I mean, it's fine if that's the only time you have, but don't expect great results from it. All right, again, if that's the only time you can seem to scrape together, then so be it. I mean, go ahead and go for it, but don't expect great results. You've got to have solitude to clear your mind to seek the Lord. And we can sit there and I say this again because I found myself having these same internal arguments. You know, it's like, well, I just don't have time. Like, when do I have time? I don't have time. Well, I don't know. How much time do you spend reading stuff on the internet? You know, 2 hours? Well, how about cutting that in half? Or even just a third? You know, set aside instead of 2 hours on the internet or whatever, you'd take 30 minutes and dedicate that 30 minutes to solitude, to really earnestly seek the Lord. So often, and again, I'm not being critical of you, because I'm really talking about myself, because all I can do is speak from my own experience. You know, so often we talk about, you know, trying to seek God, but really we're just sitting where we're at and we're wanting God to come to us. We're not really reaching out. We're not really setting aside time for God. We're sitting right here. We want God to conform to our schedule and when it's handy for us. And we're sitting here and we're not really seeking and reaching out to God. We want God to come to us. And isn't that kind of a screwy, that's not really correct as far as everybody's role? I mean, he's God. You know, we should be trying to get to him. We should be reaching out to him. And so often we find ourselves sitting there wanting God to come to us. Another thing that makes it hard and difficult to connect to God, to feel like you're connecting to God in prayer. And this is going to sound really strange to you. One of the things that really can make it difficult to connect to God in prayer is when things are going really good. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? But it's true. When things are going really good, when things are just, and I don't mean like, you know, even necessarily like, wow, you won the lottery or something. I just mean like your routine, you know, your life's not bad, not maybe great, but it's not bad. You have your routine, you go to work every day, you do your thing. You're just stuck in this rut, you know, and things are going pretty good. You're comfortable. We talk in the political realms of our discussion a lot about, you know, as the masses are comfortable, they're not willing to change things. They're not willing to move against the status quo. They're not willing to turn against the current system because they themselves are comfortable. Well, for you spiritually, for us, for as Christian believers spiritually, it's the same way for us. When you're spiritually, when your life is nice and comfy, when you're comfortable, it's hard to connect to God. There's a reason that Jesus warned it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. When you're comfortable, it's really hard to make that connection to God because, you know, what are you going to pray about? You know, I mean, really, what? You trust me. When times of uncertainty and crisis come about, you'll find a way to connect to God. When you start feeling, when you're in a position where you feel hopeless, powerless, when you have the events around you are spiraling out of your control, trust me, you will find. I was just talking about, we sit here so often when we're nice and comfy, we're sitting here. And the truth is, we're sitting here and we're wanting God to come to us. We're not reaching out to God. We're comfy where we're at. We're sitting here, we're nice and comfy. We settled into our easy chair. We want God to come to us and talk to us. You know, so we want God to come and touch us, make us feel good about ourselves. And we're not reaching, really. We're not really trying to reach out to God. Well, trust me, when events around you are spiraling out of your control and it feels like your whole world is crashing down on you and you don't know what to do, you will get your ass up and you will start trying to find God in your prayers and you'll make a connection because he's there. You will reach out. You will try to find. And I'm not saying you're going to fail an emotion of joy, just the opposite. Trust me. I've woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning while the house is quiet and cried out to the Lord, God, have you forsaken me? Have I been a fool and on the wrong path? Have you turned your back on me? That's not loss of faith, my friend. Brothers, when you continue to soldier on, when you continue to seek him, when you continue to try to do his will, that is faith. It's not an emotion. Now, I want to get to this final scripture reading as we look along here. Let's see. Let's do Matthew chapter 6. We'll do verse 5 through 8. And this is Jesus speaking. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are. For they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. In other words, their prayers aren't even about reaching God. They're about putting on a show. They're putting on a show. Look at us. How righteous we are. Oh, we're going to say a big long prayer here. So I've always been uncomfortable with like public prayer when people say, you know, let's say a prayer, you know, and somebody leads a group of people in a prayer. And I understand the reason doing that. I'm not necessarily saying there's anything wrong with that. I've just always found whenever I've been asked to do that, I've always found it to be uncomfortable because to me, prayer is a very personal thing. I mean, if there's 10 people sitting in a room, how do I pray for them? I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't, you know, I mean, I pray that God will hear you, but I don't really know what you're struggling with, nor should I. It's none of my business. One of the things I've always found, just kind of getting off on a side note. Okay, so let's get back on track here. And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily, I say unto you, they have their reward. They got all they're getting, because that's all they were really asking for, wasn't it? Let's continue on. But thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet. And when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret. And thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. You see, it's a personal thing. You have to get alone. You have to get alone. You have to get shut off from everybody. I'm not telling you go sit in your closet, literally. The point here is you have to get alone. If you really want to make a connection with God, you're going to have to find some form of solitude, even if it's just going in your room and shutting the door or whatever, going out and walking in nature, hiking in a nature trail when nobody's around, whatever you got to do to find some sort of solitude, it's going to make things easier for you. Let's continue on here. But when ye pray, use not vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Do not do vain repetition. Let me go ahead and finish this last verse because it ties into this. Be not ye therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask him. I picked this one because I'm going to tell you right now, it's one of the things when I'm having a hard time connecting in prayer. It's one of the big ruts I fall into. I'll sit there. I'm trying to reach out to God. I'm trying to find, I want to feel a connection with the Lord. And it's not working. And I realize I'm sitting here saying the same thing over and over and over and over. It's like if I just keep saying it enough time, God will hear me. Trust me, if you catch yourself doing that, just stop. You're wasting your time and it doesn't work. And here's where faith again comes in. What does Jesus tell us? God already knows what you need, dude. God already knows what you need. He knows where you're at. He knows your wants. He knows your situation. Look, prayer is trying to make that connection, but we so often, and I say we because I'm just a guy. You know, don't put me on any pedestals. I'm just a guy. But we so often, think about it. We so often in our prayers, we fall into that. We're doing these repetitions. And what when you've got something you're concerned about, you're something you're worried about, something you're praying about. What? You get stuck in this rut. And really, when you think about it, you're trying to explain it to God. Have you ever caught yourself, really, if you think about it, when you're praying about something over and over, it's like you're trying, if you think about it and analyze it accordingly, you're trying to explain it. It sounds ridiculous when you spell it out, really, doesn't it? But that's what you're doing. And I've done it. You catch yourself, you're trying to actually, you're praying about something over and over and over and over again because you're just trying to make God understand. Because if God could just understand, then he'll touch your heart. He'll speak to you and he will do something about it. Trust me, God already understands. He understands it better than you, believe me. And again, I speak this to myself as much as you, the listeners, all of you here in the congregation. I'm not singling out the person who wrote the thing. I'm actually, when I say you, I'm talking to all of you listening and to myself. You're not going to explain nothing to the Lord. The Lord, he knows better than you. He sees it in the context of eternity. He already knows what's going to come of this. You don't. He knows your motivations better than you. He knows your faults. He knows. You're not going to make no excuses. You're not going to explain anything to him. Get out of that mindset. He already knows. You're reaching out in prayer because you're trying to get closer to God. You're trying to reach him. You're trying to understand. You're asking for some understanding. What are you supposed to do? God, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do next? But you're not going to explain anything. And when you catch yourself in that rut, and it's a real easy rut to fall into, understand, remind yourself, you're not going to explain anything to God. He already gets it. He already knows. He knows your troubles. It's fine. It's fine to bring these things up. I'm not saying you can't talk about them. But when you catch yourself in a rut, you're just repeating yourself and you're going on and on and on. God already gets it. And again, this isn't a failing of your own faith because we all do it. I do it. Everybody listening who's a Christian believer does it. Don't be down on yourself, but just recognize when you're doing it and stop. Because at some point, you're better off just quit trying to pray at all. And for a final prayer tip, I'll give you this. So often when we pray, and in fact, I would say the vast majority of the time, and again, I say we, all of us, when we pray, what are we doing? We're always coming to God asking for something, aren't we? Imagine your own children. How would you like it if your own children, the only time they ever even spoke to you or acknowledged your existence was when they showed up and asked you for something? Hey, buy me this. Hey, buy me that. Hey, I want a new this. Rest of the time they pretend, they go off and do what they want. They run around with their friends or pretend you don't exist. The only time they come and talk to you or even acknowledge your very existence is when they want something. How would that make you feel as a parent? Yet we do that to God, don't we? Oh, really? We do. What kind of children are we? We sit here and we piss and moan and bitch because you're going through this stuff. And why doesn't God do something? But what? As if there's some sort of failing with God. What kind of children are we? When was the last time we sought the Lord that we weren't asking for something? How do we act like spoiled children that only seek out their parent, only seek out their father, when they want them to buy them something, to give them something, to make their life easier? When you're struggling in your prayer, here's a little tip. Try letting that go. Recognize that maybe it's time to quit asking for something for you. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I mean, but maybe if you're struggling in your prayer, when you're struggling in your prayer, this is one of the things that works for me. So I'm sharing it with all of you. Try step back and look at your prayers. More than likely, you're going to find you're just continually asking for stuff and ask yourself, would you like it if your children were that way? Put aside asking for things. You want to try to get closer to God in your prayer. Try putting aside asking for stuff. And instead, just open your heart, reach out to Jesus, and think, just clear your mind as much as you can, and just think of yourself as being there for him. You don't even have to say anything. In fact, honestly, the best prayers, because when the Holy Spirit wells up in you, you will find that so often words won't even come out of your mouth. It's just like all of this spiritual energy, just these thoughts. You can feel all of these things, these thoughts and stuff flowing out of you. But you can't put them into words because it's happening so fast and there's just this mixture of all of this stuff coming out. Try just being silent and just try reaching out and thinking of how you just want to be with Jesus. You're not asking for anything. In fact, if anything, try to set yourself on a mindset of, you know, I know there's nothing I can do for you, Lord, but I can be here for you without asking for something. I could just be here in fellowship with you, Lord Jesus. I just want to sit in your presence. I'm not asking for anything. If there's anything I can do in my small existence for you and your will, what you want, you know, I want to do it. I just want to be near you.
You will often find yourself suddenly, you will make that connection. It'll help you make that connection because you've got to stop setting aside the focus on yourself and get your focus on the Lord. A little pro tip for you, a little pointers for you. I just try to make it easier for all of you to try to find that connection. So often we need to get our focus off of ourselves onto Him. Just seek Him. He's just, okay, this isn't working. I'm constantly asking. I'm not making a connection with the Lord. I'm talking in circles. I'm saying the same thing over and over again. Let's try something else. In fact, let's just lay down here. Lay down and rest and close my eyes and reach out to Jesus. I'm not asking for anything. Just say, Lord Jesus, I'm not asking for anything. I just want to be near you. Imagine that. We talked earlier. We got to wrap up here. We're running long. We talked earlier, just a few minutes ago, about how would you feel as a parent if your spoiled children just did nothing but continually came to you. The only time they continually came to you is when they wanted something. The rest of the time, they did their own thing, pretended you don't exist. But whenever they come to you, it's always to ask you to buy something. Imagine that. Now imagine if those same children, now one of them comes to you and you're ready. You're like, what do you want now? No, I just want to be with you. They just come in and sit with you. And they say, no, I don't want anything. Dad, I just want to sit with you. I just want to be near you. Is there anything I can do for you? I know I probably can't. I'm just a kid. But if there's anything I can do for you, otherwise, I just want to sit here. Even if you don't say anything, I just want to be here. I want to be in the same room with you. I just want to be close to you. Now, as a parent, what's your reaction to that going to be? Get up and walk out of the room? No. No, you see, so many of the experiences we're given in life, whether it be as a parent or anything else, it's these experiences that God gives us as a part of this short time we get on this earth to make us understand, to give us a better understanding of Him, of where He's coming from. And in these things, we can gain a greater understanding. I mean, the Lord is above our knowing, obviously. But at the same time, He gives us these experiences, these things to draw from, these things to understand, so that we can, at least on some level, try to relate with Him, with how we relate to Him. We get a kind of an image, an idea, so that we can understand Him better. I want to take the time to thank again Sin Souchade for the email, because for providing us a really good timely thing to discuss in our Church of the Lampshade sermon this week. Again, I read that and I just really, really thought this meets fellow Christian believers where they're at. This meets us where we're at. It really touches where so many of us, what we're all at, what we go through. And I want to thank the listener for opening up and sharing this with us, because it gave us something. You know, I sit here, these sermons, these topics don't magically appear on their own. Some weeks, honestly, I struggle to find something that I think will be relevant and move people in their faith. But this week, I think, has really been a good one, and I hope, honestly, this is stuff we all go through, and this is stuff that it's recorded, it's here online, you can download this, and you can go back, you know, again, and re-listen to this as y'all struggle, as we struggle in our faith, and remember, Again, faith is not an emotion. Don't confuse the two. Faith is when you soldier on despite your emotions. When the rubber hits the road, that's what it comes down to. Yes, sometimes you'll feel an emotion of joy and things such as that. But don't confuse the two. And all of these other points that we've covered today. Again, I think this has really been a spirit-moved sermon this week. And I just praise the Lord for the blessing of being able to share it with each other. And to have this fellowship with one another. We've got to go ahead and wrap up. We got to get out of here. Again, I thank you for joining us. I thank you for all of you who financially support what we're trying to do here. However you look at it, through just helping me keep the lights on, keep doing the work I do here, and for our legal fight that lies ahead of us. Again, drop me an email, get you a free copy of the book. It's the least I can do to give back to all of you. Again, I thank you for joining us. And I hope that we will continue to grow as we seek the truth, as we seek to grow in our faith. Folks, we'll be back next week for the all-new Church of the Lampshade Show. Again, thank you for joining us this week. We'll be back next week right here on Radio Aaron for Grandpa Lampshade's Church of the Lampshade.
Those stormy years leave deep and endless trails across his face. He'll wander back when morning rolls around. For it's an old man's right to spend his life just searching for a place where he can sit and watch the sun go down. Time's run its course and freed the hearts that pulled them through their prime. And placed a different life of their pride. Now towering rows of buildings grow in fields they left behind. Life seems twice as heavy as wild. So crowd around the corner, boys, and take your good old time. And pass along a piece of yesterday. A tender breeze of memory is blowing through your mind, softer than those strands of silver gray. The watch inside their vest, it tells them when it's time to move along. Just rambling through the avenues, they'll sometimes stop to rest, but it's hard to find a place where they belong. So crowd around the corner, boys, and take and pass along a piece of yesterday. A tender breeze of memories is blowing through your mind, softer than those strands of silver gray, and sweeter than the things you've seen today.